Emirates are bringing the other side of the world closer to home with daily flights from London Stansted. Starting the 8th of June, you'll be able to fly from London Stansted all the way to Dubai and on to over 150 destinations worldwide, making getting from your home to the other side of the world much simpler. Fly Emirates from London Stansted and discover the other side of the world.
Well, hello there, and welcome to the AFA podcast, the official podcast of animationforadults.com. This is episode 102. So this week, as always, we are here to talk about all the latest goings on in the animation world. And it's been a while since we have talked about any news or anything like that. But there has been rather a lot of trailers this week. So we definitely wanted to talk about some of them. So we wanted to catch up with what's been going on. I'm Chris, and I am joined this week by Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Chris.
How's it going?
It's going great, thanks.
Awesome. And Nina. Hi, Nina.
Hi, Chris.
How is it going?
It's going really, really great.
Awesome. So we're here to talk about animation, and this week we wanted to talk about a lot of the trailers that have come out, because it's been one of the biggest weeks for trailers in ages. In the animation world and in general, actually, because I think just trailers have been coming out. People have called it Trailer Week. I don't know if there's a reason for it. I was thinking, is it related to Annecy coming up and lots of footage will be shown there? But that doesn't really explain like all the other trailers coming out. So it's just, I don't know, it's the week everyone decided to release trailers. But before we get into trailers, there was another story that we wanted to talk about that's important to mention, and that is the fact that the fate of Pixar's John Lasseter has been announced. As you may remember, he took a sabbatical in November after announcement. Well, basically, there were allegations of inappropriate behavior and stuff going back quite a long time. And he took a sabbatical and no one knew what was going to happen. And there were suggestions that they might be trying to bring him back in some capacity. And now we have the result, and that is that he will be leaving both Pixar and Disney for good, but not until the end of the year, because he will be employed in a...
I think that's a consulting role.
In a consulting role.
Until my immediate reaction to that is it's a privileged kind of firing, right? It's not exactly justice. I mean, like the whole narrative has been one that he's controlled. Mm-hmm. It's not ever been... Like he was the first one to make the statement about going on sabbatical. It seemed to be a sort of preemptive thing. Mm-hmm. There must have been so much, you know, back and forthing with lawyers and whatnot that we haven't heard about. So it's been a strange one because he's sort of been able to control the narrative a little bit. But to me, when I first heard about his plan to leave at the end of this year, I was like, well, he's still going to be earning a John Lasseter wage until the end of the year. Is that really...
Yeah, it's like, isn't that convenient for you? Like,
yeah.
I did see somebody say, I can't tell you who it was, because I didn't recognize them, and I can't remember, sorry. But somebody did say that... basically, in the corporate world, it's quite common practice to keep people in a consultant role as when you actually are basically firing them. And it's kind of like a common practice, and part of the reason is to like stop people going on immediately to a competitor and things like that. And mm-hmm. you know, there might be like legal reasons or whatever for doing it, but it is essentially that he is, you know, being fired. But they it's corporate speak to make it look like it isn't, kind of thing. So I don't know, I'm not privy to that information. I can't say if that's true, and I'm obviously he needs to go. It'd be obviously we'd all like to see it just not coming back at all, but it's at least, you know, he won't be coming back full time. And if, you know, if that is basically what's got to happen, then at least it's happening in some way.
I'm glad they didn't bring him.
Yeah. Because there was a big campaign online, hashtag lose Lassiter, because there was a rumor, I don't know if it was it, I can't remember what source it was from, but there was a story going around saying that they were trying to work out a way how to bring him back. And obviously people were saying, no, hang on, don't do that.
Yeah.
The thing about it that is a little bit hard to, you know, for me to take still is it doesn't seem to really be a story about listening. On Disney's, I mean, on, I guess, what's he called, Bob Iger's part, you know, it's like, for the higher ups at least at Disney, it doesn't seem to be a story in which they come off as good listeners, and therefore people who value their you know, the workers who seem to someone at that level inconsequential.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean inconsequential, I just mean, you know, there is a hierarchy there, definitely. The hierarchy is something that's enabled Lassiter to get away with this behavior for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's kind of, it's encouraging, but it's also, you know, a story which I'm looking at going like, okay, there still needs to be something better done here.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot more progress to be made, for sure.
The suggestion at the moment is that it seems like Pete Docter will be taking more of a big role at Pixar, although whether he'll be, you know, filling the same role, we don't know. And Jennifer Lee, the director of Frozen, is expected to be promoted at Walt Disney Animation Studios. And it would obviously be a sensible thing to have a woman in a, you know, high position at, well, in both companies, really, but somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, Pete's been around for a long time, and he's done really great work. And, you know, Jennifer, like, Frozen, you can't really overstate how much Frozen has helped Disney out. And, like, you know, she helped mastermind that, and she's also been at Disney for a while. So like, it makes sense to look at those people, because honestly, I couldn't really think of anybody else who would be able to replace Lasseter other than like Pete.
I think that being, everything, you know, all that being said, it is a pretty big, you know, domino to for people to have knocked down.
Mm-hmm.
And it is encouraging to a degree that the pressure works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because there's no way that this has happened without a tremendous amount of pressure. And unlike other scandals that seem to have come to light in the animation world, you know, with John Kay and Chris Savino, the Lassiter story has not had a public allegation and a voice of someone or a group of people who have come forward and have been publicly and been public about it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has happened on the, there's no way that hasn't happened with regards to Lassiter, but it's just not so public. So yeah, it's kind of encouraging. There was a very good BuzzFeed article that came out this week, written by Ariane Lang, I think. I think that's how you say the reporter's name. Anyway, it was about the Animation Guild and what a group of animation artists and technicians did in coming forward to the guild about Chris Savino's behavior. Chris Savino was fired from Nickelodeon last year, I think, after complaints and allegations about his about assaults that he'd made came out. But it's a very good article for, frankly, explaining a lot of the pain, really, and the fight that still has to go on to get results, basically, like this.
Yeah, BuzzFeed's really been on top of this particular issue. Like, you know, they dropped that article about John Kay, which made a lot of waves, and they've been doing really great journalism on this front, so.
Yeah, it's the strange new world where the new paragons of journalism of BuzzFeed and Teen Vogue.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if it's good journalism, it doesn't really matter where it happens.
Yeah.
I think we've said pretty much all we can say about mm-hmm. this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you know, as someone who works in an animation industry, definitely not Hollywood, you know, it's a slightly different world. It's encouraging as a whole that, you know, stances are being made about what's acceptable and what isn't. And, yeah, that's, I don't really know what else to say, really.
Yeah.
I think also recently Pixar, I think they announced a development deal with the director of the upcoming short. Is it Dumplings? Is that the actual name? Or
this thing's called Bao.
Bao, yeah, but it's about Dumplings. Yeah. Yeah, the
delicious.
Yeah, the director of that, who is a young Asian American woman. I think she is supposed to be developing a feature. So
mm-hmm.
I hope, you know, changes are happening. Hopefully we're going to get Pixar stories from, you know, more than just the same old white men that we've been getting all this time.
Yeah.
And
they definitely need to diversify their directors.
And, you know, that's part of the thing that will create change, we hope.
Yeah, the dismantling of any kind of culture which shuts voices out. I mean, there are stories going back that you can read about Brave and what it represented for the company, and, you know, Pixar, they're masters at PR handling and everything, and
mm-hmm.
it's a little tricky to find those stories, but the stories about, you know, just how Brenda Chapman had to fight against a boys' club mm-hmm. culture are kind of, yeah, are upsetting, and it's it puts a lot of things into perspective, basically. Anyway.
Yeah, let's move on to more cheerful subjects.
Exciting. Yeah.
Yes. And talk a little bit about the trailers that have come out this week.
The cool stuff that's happening.
So much cool stuff.
Yeah, I am going to... I think I'm going to do them in the order they came out, just to make it easy. So the first one that came out this week was the second trailer for Ralph Breaks the Internet, : Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Cool.
Yeah, so we already had a teaser trailer a little while ago where we found out going into the internet, and then there was a thing happened to a bunny, and there was
The bunny.
And there was a baby Moana, people say it looked very much like Moana, and yeah. But this time, this trailer, what do we think of this trailer?
Honestly, you first, Tina. Okay. It honestly doesn't give me any more than the last trailer as to how this film is going to work structurally at all. I mean, I like the Daft Punk. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. Always good.
Yeah, it almost seems like there's less reason why they're going to the internet in this trailer than in the first trailer.
It's to go and look at all the cool stuff that Disney owns.
Honestly, yeah, it's like a commercial.
And Lad Bible.
Lad Bible? Is Lad Bible in there?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's weird, man. One of the buildings has a Lad Bible logo on it.
That's just weird.
I know. It's some real dissonance going on. I think my main thought about the trailer is basically, look, guys, I know you can do this stuff. I know you've, well done, there's Google in the film. Well done, there's a joke about Twitter. I remember feeling this way when the first Wreck-It Ralph was coming out. Oh, cool, Bowser's in the film. Is it actually a good film? And it was. It's one of my favorite Disney movies of the last, 10 years. I love Wreck-It Ralph. It's brilliant. Because, like all good films, there are some really compelling characters in it. And I fell in love with those characters. And that's all I really care about. They could literally have a movie about Vanellope and Ralph, you know, sitting in a truck that they've been locked into for 2 hours, and it would be a good movie as far as I'm concerned. and it's kind of like, by the third trailer, it's because we're going to be talking a lot about trailers today. We've kind of been conditioned that by the time a third trailer comes out, you'll get some quite heavy hints about the plot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still very little, and I don't really know what the emotional core of this film is going to be.
No clue.
So that's why I'm not really that interested, because I don't really know what journey there is that they're going to be going on, other than, sorry, onto the internet.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's kind of like, it's almost appalling to see Disney sort of showing off how much they own everything. It's almost like patting themselves on the back saying, hey, look at all this stuff that we own. Let's make a movie about everything that we own. And it's like, oh my God, I didn't realize that's bizarre. I don't even know.
How to read it. I also saw someone saying it's very hard to look at a big corporate logo in a Disney movie, like to see the Twitter birds tweeting, and not just think about all of the awful practices that go on at Twitter and their complete lack of regulation, and in many cases straight up enabling Nazis, racists.
Facebook is here.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of hard to separate that from, you know, seeing those logos.
Yeah, and there's this screenshot where Vanellope goes Disneyland, and it's it's Disney animation next to Marvel, next to Pixar, next to Star Wars, next to the Muppets, and it's holy crap, you know. It's when you go to Disney World, you see all that, but it's kind of different to sort of see a movie.
Yeah. That's fine. It's not a movie. It's a holiday special. To do that.
You know, yeah, that's a good way to think about it.
It's so that's why, you know, it's definitely weird, like watching trailers, because it's like tech. I have the feeling that audiences aren't really impressed by things that are technically good anymore, particularly in CG. And we'll get to that a little bit when we get to Spider-Man, I think.
Hmm.
It's kind of like, yeah, we know you can do that. We know you can have like a TIE fighter flying into a thing and make a shot that looks really busy. I don't think people are impressed by that stuff. So it's kind of, I think it's kind of why, I mean, apart from the big reaction to the Disney princesses, the reaction to the trailer's been a bit lukewarm.
Yeah, most people are just focusing on the princesses, I would say.
Yeah.
Having them all together in one space.
Yeah. Fine.
Could I add a bit of positivity?
Because, please do, Chris. Yeah.
I like this trailer, okay? I'm excited about Wreck-It Ralph 2. I think it looks good. There is a bit of me that's a bit disappointed that they're doing this internet thing, because there's so much more in the video game world that they could be exploring. But the fact is, this trailer, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I liked to see these characters again. And all those, I watched the trailer. I thought, yay, that made me happy. And I looked on, I went immediately online and just saw people go, and it was like, okay. I think there is a part, it's like the internet suddenly decided that the idea of references and stuff is automatically bad. And I think like you saw this with like Ready Player One and everything. I think if Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out now, people would be like, oh, this fan service wankery. It's just corporate rubbish. They're trying to make a film that appeals to me with all the things I like. How dare they?
Right. I get where you're coming from. I think... Yeah, I don't think people think that references are bad now necessarily, write them off. I think it's, for me, it's about cynicism.
Yeah, and like,
and particularly with Ready Player One, I was just like, what a cynical move to put the Iron Giant in your film and parade him around like he's just a cool robot and have him firing his weapon like it's a cool thing. When ideologically, everything about him rejects the idea of being a weapon. Like, if you love the Iron Giant, then you know that much. And seeing him used in a way that's antithetical to that, for me, was cynical enough to put me off watching the film.
I think it's about, like... Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, that's fine.
I think it's about tension and, like, how you use what you're referencing. Like... Like with Ready Player One, it really felt like they were using it just in this kind of cheap way to attract people without actually understanding the context of what it is that they're using and why people like it.
Whereas yeah.
With Wreck-It Ralph, I feel like that, I mean, because it's mostly Disney properties, obviously they know why people love it. Like even just putting all the princesses together, like there's a reason why everyone's talking about that, because that's what people want to see.
Yeah.
So they know like what they have and why people like it. So I definitely think it's not going to be like Ready Player One, I don't think. And like even just like that first scene with Ralph and Vanellope was probably my favorite part, because it was just the two of them and their silly relationship. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot how much I love these two. So I think what you said earlier, Dan, where it's like, even if it's just the two of them in a truck for 2 hours, like, I think it's going to be a good time just because I like these characters and there's going to be a lot of things for them to react to.
Yeah, I think so too. That's kind of my, the one thing which I still think is going to be a good movie, because I think it's got the same director as the first one, right?
Yeah, Rich Moore.
Rich Moore. And he's great, and he has been working for a very long time in animation. He's a veteran. He knows, and he also co-directed Zootopia as well.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. So he's been working in animation for a long time, and he knows that there has to be more to the movie than a bunch of references.
Yeah, I'm sure this movie's...
And I absolutely trust him for that. I just wish they had hinted a little bit at what sort of journey the characters were going to be taking, because one of the reasons I love Wreck-It Ralph so much is by the time the film ends, they've gone on like a really great classic like Hollywood movie character arc. And I want to know what is emotionally next for Wreck-It Ralph. What challenge does he have to face next? Because the premise of the whole first movie was about him accepting who he was. And it seems like he's done that now. So yeah. do you know what I'm saying? Like it's, I just only really care about those characters. I think the whole, fairy lights and tinsel show of all the references isn't a bad thing, but I need a little bit more.
Yeah, well, most of them are probably just going to be, you know, basically jokes.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, I think so. Yeah. I mean,
like,
you don't really consider it. Exactly. Yeah.
That's the thing. This is the other comparison people make is like, oh, it's just Disney doing the Emoji Movie. And it's like, well, I haven't watched it, to be honest, the Emoji Movie. But the reason people, you know, the reason that film looks so lazy is because that literally was just let's make a film about something that is.
Oh yeah, hot take, Chris. It's not good.
Yeah.
No. I've seen it. It's not good. It's yeah. It definitely starts. But I think this is the trouble why. It definitely starts, Emoji Movie starts by going, hey, do you recognize this? Like trying to get the audience on board. And I think it's just general audiences are just wary of being treated like that.
Yeah.
But if you don't have like the plot and the characters and everything, then it doesn't matter. And I have faith that Wreck-It Ralph has strong enough characters and jokes. Because, you know, there's lots of great jokes in this trailer as well. And, like, the bit with the Disney princesses, the, Cinderella with the slipper shiv.
Yeah, that was great.
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Everything with Pocahontas is so funny.
So, yeah, I'm thoroughly on board for this. And also...
The ending of the trailer is good as well.
Yeah. And yeah, we meet the. She is a character called Yes, with lots of S's, who is a algorithm, voiced by Taraji P. Henson. And they make a reference to the title being, "Hey, shouldn't it be called Wreck It? Ralph wrecks the internet. Doesn't that sound better?" And they say no.
Because Ralph breaks the internet, because we have to make sure people remember that it's a weird reference to a naked magazine cover of Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, from like how many years ago?
Spurting on her own bum. You're right, from like 4 years ago at least.
Yeah.
That's the reference the kids are into.
I mean, I know, like, it took a while to make the movie, but, like, yeah.
They're like, oh, we already bought all these URLs, and we've told McDonald's the movie's going to be called that, so.
Yeah, the Wreck-It Ralph 3 is going to be called WhatsApp. It's going to be a reference for me.
It's going to be called, is Ralph in the... gold dress, or the golden white dress, or the
I was just trying to think of an old reference.
Yanny versus whatever the other one was.
Or it's called Ralphie McRalph face. Oh
wow, that was a deep it's probably not going to be bad, but the trailers are weird. Yes.
Hey, and speaking of films that are based on things Yeah, that's a brilliant segue there.
Are you talking about every movie that's going to be out from now?
Whatever.
Yeah. All these trailers for sure that we're talking about are based on pre-existing things.
Based on corporate things that shouldn't be good, but somehow are. Lego Movie 2's got a trailer. Lego Movie 2, the second part. We've got our first teaser for this, which called a teaser, but it's like a full trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it's more of a trailer.
Pretty big tease.
Fair warning, we're going to have spoilers for Lego Movie 1, the ending, in case just anyone.
Oh, okay, yes.
Because I have Lego Movie. I know, you know, lots of people's favorite movie of that year and everyone loves. I like it. I hate the ending. I think it kind of ruins a lot of it for me. I do.
You mean the whole Will Ferrell being a live action thing?
But I felt the move that tied the whole movie together, like that pulled together the whole thesis about like how you're supposed to play with Legos and how.
But none of it was real. They're not real.
I kind of agree. Like the way I feel about the ending is, it doesn't. That part of the ending doesn't piss me off because I was so on board with the film by the time that happened. I was like, well, you can do anything now, and I'm on board. When it did that thing that I wasn't a massive fan of, it still didn't completely harm the movie.
Mm.
And when you said the ending of the movie, funnily enough, the thing that I thought about was the very last bit.
Which I'd forgotten about.
when the Duplo arrives.
Yeah, I'd forgotten that was a thing.
Right.
I loved that.
Yeah.
I just think, oh, that bloody bit with Will Ferrell and it's not real. That's what I think of the ending.
But I thought it was brilliant.
yeah, well, I didn't.
Okay.
So, I've always had this bit of a... I've been concerned about Lego Movie 2 because obviously it's going to have to pick up somewhere with the... after that. And I have to say, my first reaction is, I love the start with the where it's like Mad Max style. I thought that's inspired. That has made me, you know, have more faith that this is going to be good. I was like, oh, okay, that's smart. That's a smart thing to do. So yeah. So having gone from, I hate the ending of the first one, and I think maybe this film could kind of, you know, redeem that in my mind if they do it right, I think. You know, sometimes, like, when you see a later film and it sort of recontextualizes the first one, I think that could maybe happen here.
I just thought it was funny. Like, I was just like, I miss this kind of humor. Yeah. I love that the Lord and Miller kind of humor. I mean, I know they're not writing this one. They're just producing it. Though they are credited as writers as well, though there's a lot of writers on this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've had trouble with this movie. It was originally going to be directed by one Rob Shrub, who was taken off it I think about a year ago now, and it, you know, they're definitely. I mean, I don't believe that he was making a bad film there. It just wasn't what they were after. So whatever they're doing, they're being very specific about. But I mean, I mean the other Lego movies they made, Batman and even Ninjago, which wasn't as good as any of them, they still were giving the animators and the writers like a lot of freedom to just do the craziest things.
Yeah, like I feel like,
and that's exciting.
Yeah, like even if maybe those two movies aren't as strong as the first Lego movie, they're still really solid, fun, smart.
Oh no, Lego Batman is amazing. Ninjago, I'm not so hot on.
Yeah.
I prefer Lego Batman. I prefer it to the Lego movie. See, I'm all a controversial opinion.
I don't think that is. I'm kind of on board with you there, Chris.
Yeah. And Lego Batman's in this as well, again.
So, yeah, of course. He was like the breakout character. That's why he comes on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So are you into this one, Nina?
Yeah, I'm excited. I didn't have the same problems with the Lego Movie that you guys seem to have. Like I thought it was a brilliant film. So I'm like really excited to see.
Oh no, I didn't have problems with that at all.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I'm just like really excited. I mean, I was just like revisiting these characters again made me really happy, you know, because they're just so delightful. And I was just, and the animation is always so stunning in these movies. It's so bright and so colorful. Mm-hmm. And I'm just excited. Like, I love looking at these movies, like how everything is made of Legos. Like the level of detail is just a delight.
Oh, it's crazy. There was someone on Twitter who'd like screenshotted like a frame from the Lego Batman movie, and they showed how like when Robin jumped, you know, to do like the old fashioned like smear effect. You know, when like there's if you pause an animation. And mm-hmm. sometimes there's a frame which is like completely bonkers, like a face stretched out or something.
Yeah, yeah, smears.
They showed how for the Lego Movie they like attached actual Lego pieces to where, for instance, like Robin's foot would be to behave as a smear frame. But if you paused it, they hadn't stretched the bricks. They just used like a longer brick. Like it was, you know, like it was stop motion, basically. But yeah, the attention to just the creativity with which these films are made is exciting.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to it. Like the first Lego Movie, like really like surprised me. I mean, I remember when I saw the trailer for the first Lego Movie, I'm like, this looks really dumb but really fun. And then I watched mm-hmm. it, and it was, but also it was smart. So I was like, I'm excited. I'm optimistic about it.
Yeah, yeah. And you're right, Chris. They've kind of done the thing where they recontextualize the first film and
mm-hmm.
Emmett's sort of unremarkableness is sort of remarked upon.
Yeah, by, like I'm curious to see what they...
By what's... I've forgotten her name. She has like a crazy
Wild
name.
Wild Style. But she's now going by the more normal name of Lucy, which is her real name. But
okay.
Yeah. So the plot seems to involve basically some aliens showing up, one of which is going to be voiced by Tiffany Haddish. And I have not been able to get this on my own, but I heard somebody say that it looks like these new characters are based on the Lego Friends, which is the Lego thing.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's a genius move.
And the they talk about the new planet being called like the Sistar.
Okay.
So. Really good.
One of the things they said about the sequel, obviously, like you say, there have been challenges along, because it's been delayed by, it was supposed to be out like last year, I think, possibly even, or this year at least, but not it's not coming out till next year now, because it's been delayed so many times. But one of the things Phil Lord and Chris Miller said was that there was going to be more female characters and more girl stuff, they said. So it seems to be, and the suggestion is that this is going to be like relating, if we go to the like the meta story around it, the people that, you know, I'm not so keen on, but it may become important again, that it's going to relate to the boy from the first one's sister. And this may be up. Yeah, it's set 5 years after the original, but whether that's in just in Lego world or what,
I think they'd do good to drop that stuff. I think people care way more about Emmett and Lucy and the other characters than the wraparound story. the Lego Ninjago movie had a wraparound story as well. And look, it involved Jackie Chan. And it still wasn't very good. So I'm kind of, and I mean, like, I thought it was a mathematical impossibility for Jackie Chan, you know, to sort of not absolutely, you know, blow the pants off something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think they should just leave that behind.
But I kind of think they probably haven't. And maybe it would annoy me more if they did drop it after introducing it in the first film, because then I'd be like going, but what? How does this relate to... Now we know it's not real. None of it's real. But then...
still real. It's real in our hearts.
But then they didn't do anything about it in Lego Batman movie.
No, and it was brilliant. Yeah. Because you got it. You didn't need Lego to be contextualized because it's fucking Lego. No one's watching it going, what are these construction bricks? But they're like, no one's puzzled by that.
Mm. Well, because Lego Batman wasn't about like critiquing Lego. It was about critiquing Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically Batman as he's been portrayed in the media recently.
Mm-hmm.
And ever. And every like obscure reference to like the most obscure villains ever and things like that.
I gotta say, that was, for some reason, there was a way with in which, because spoilers for Lego Batman, the ending when they involve stuff from outside of the Batman franchise but are still in Lego franchise,
Harry Potter
and Daleks and stuff,
that was
delightful.
Yeah, that's what got me. That I never thought I'd see Daleks in a US film ever.
But there's something so funny as well about the villain being Voldemort.
Yeah.
And so
yes. Yeah, I think that's the way to do it.
This conversation just makes me want to watch Lego Batman again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want Lego Batman 2. Never mind Lego Movie 2. I guess, yeah.
But I think lots of people do. It would do really well. Surely that's in the works.
I don't know. It's been announced, but because
do you know what? I think they could absolutely save DC if they made a Justice League, Lego Justice League.
Oh. Just Lego movies.
It would piss off the fanboys so much.
Yeah.
Release the Snyder Cut of Lego Justice League. But they could do so much with it. Because that scene with them was delightful in the film.
Yeah. I think they've like cut back on some of the plans of Lego Cinematic Universe. I think there was... Jorge Gutierrez was directing a film for them, and I think it might have either he left or it's been scrapped. I don't know. So perhaps they have changed to thinking, actually, let's make Lego Batman 2. We know that one will actually succeed, rather than do a completely other Lego spin-off.
Yeah, they could absolutely do that, but then they could like backdoor pilot like anything into that universe now,
because
it's a Lego movie. It's not necessarily a Batman movie.
Yeah, we might have a new breakout character in this one that's gonna.
Yeah, no, this one looks fun. It's a little grueling that it's a year away.
February 8th, 2019. So yeah, kind of. I wasn't expecting to get a trailer so far out, really.
Yeah, especially since like a complete trailer, it's kind of weird. But
I guess it might be a like not just for the audience, but maybe also for the investors, particularly particularly after it's been delayed so indefinitely.
Yeah,
for them to just say, look, this is a real thing, it exists. We're telling people that it's coming out. You know, you'll see your millions and millions of dollars in return soon.
In between going on to the next trailer, if we covered this one, do you think? Anyone else got anything to say?
I think we covered it.
Yeah. I think we might get a trailer before too long for the new Leica movie, Missing Link, because after not hearing anything from Leica for ages, they announced that there is a new film in production, and then they said, oh, and it's coming out next year. So I think, you know, obviously much more of it's done than, because they didn't announce it till it was well into production this time. Because when we first heard about it, we didn't know when it was going to come out. So it could have been, you know, like 3 years away or something. And then they go, no, it's out next year. So I think there could be a trailer for that soon. And that's exciting.
Possibly. Yeah, maybe end of summer. Because they do, I remember Leica do teaser trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have one for Kubo? I'm just thinking of they sort of did the Pixar, the old Pixar style thing with Box Trolls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where they had a trailer that wasn't, they didn't have any footage from the film, but it sort of introduced you idea of the movie.
There was like that voiceover, like about different families, like families coming.
Yeah.
It'd be really nice if we got something to.
Box Trolls is pretty underrated, I think.
Yes, I like it. Yeah, we haven't talked about the new Leica news, actually.
There's not much to say. I just heard it was like kind of a Sasquatchy thing.
Yeah, but it's got Hugh Jackman as a monster hunter who makes friends with a basically a Bigfoot voiced by.
This is the second time he's played a monster hunter.
Van Helsing,
yeah.
Yeah, but they're doing that thing again of getting, you know, a famous person, a famous Australian, and going, yes, he's going to be playing an Englishman in an animated movie. I know he's not famous for doing his own accent in the first place.
He's not.
But
I think, I'll say this much. It's very hard to judge, particularly like in smaller productions. Mm. With animation, a voice is the biggest name that you can get to a film, and therefore will be the biggest pull you get to a film. Leica don't make absolute runaway blockbuster smashes.
No.
Their films do kind of modestly. And I think that's the trouble with. What you're talking about, Chris, like getting the best person cast for the job, they probably need, you know, Zach Galifianakis and the pull of a name like that for them to have a successful marketing campaign. It sounds very cynical, and
no, it is. I mean, that's what happened with Kubo for sure, because like a lot of people are like, why aren't they like hiring, you know,
unknown actors.
Yeah, yeah, and they're like, no, let's hire these known actors everybody knows. Is that the only way we can get people to watch the movie, I guess?
It's, I have mixed feelings about that one in particular, but yeah, the way the cookie crumbles. Yeah. It's why you have Ronan Keating being, I think, was it Ronan Keating being the pull for the Postman Pat movie?
He was the singing voice.
He was a singing voice, and Stephen Mangan was the talking voice of Postman Pat. Yeah, but that's a good example. I bring up that film only because, like a lot of things, the voice actors
Leica
up. Yeah. It's stop motion. Yeah, the voice actors basically, you know, suck up so much of the thing's budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they also got a a quirkier cast as well. They've got Stephen Fry and Emma Thompson and David Williams and Matt Lucas. There's part of me that kind of feels like Leica are sort of, I know they're American, but they're sort of, they've got a bit of a British spirit to them sometimes.
I think a large part has to do with their location.
Yeah.
They're in Portland and they're kind of away from Hollywood, and Portland has its own craziness going on, and that can be enough. Yeah.
It might be partly because of like basically doing Box Trolls and all the British characters.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. And also having, you know, British talent a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think the co-director and writer of Paranorman's British.
Oh, and he's doing the new film.
Oh, really? Well, there you go.
Chris Butler. So there.
That's it, Chris Butler. There you are, Chris.
There we go. Right, so yeah, I just thought it was worth mentioning about that film because we haven't had a chance to talk about it, and I wanted to. I'm excited.
What's it called?
Missing Link.
Okay.
And it's coming out like next spring 2019.
Fantastic.
Right. So moving on to the next trailer, and it is one that's very exciting.
Is it?
Yes, and it is. It's linked in a way to, well, we were talking about Lego Batman and how that was one of the best incarnations of Batman we've seen.
You're saying the suffix man has something to do with
it. Yeah, you could say that. And that would be the new trailer for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. The animated... Oh, actually, also it's also linked to our last trailer we were talking about, because of Lord and Miller being involved, even though this is at Sony. I believe it is...
They're old gaffes?
Oh, yeah, because they started with...
Cloudy,
A Chance of Meatballs there, and then, yeah, so that's where they had their first animated hit.
And did Sony make... I have a feeling that Sony, through Columbia, made the Jump Street movies as well.
Oh, yeah, they might have done.
Yeah, so. I think you're right.
I can't remember. Anyway, so this is the arguably, and from where I stand on my feed and everything, the trailer that seems to have had the biggest impact, almost positive impact.
Well, when we talk about our next trailer, I will...
That's why I said... on my feed, at
least. I would say something about, I could say it now, just as we are. We had a poll about what was the best trailer on the AFA feed. Although I have to say, I probably should have included Lego Movie 2 as the fourth option when I actually included Don't Make Me Choose as the third option, fourth option. So it was Wreck-It Ralph 2.
It was a fair poll.
Yeah, it was Wreck-It Ralph to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse or How to Train Your Dragon 3. And most of the time through, Spider-Man was in the lead. And then it got retweeted by a fairly popular How to Train Your Dragon news site.
I forget it.
And then, Dragon Spam, basically. And
okay, okay.
It won. What? It got 72% of the vote, and it was a 1 day long poll, and we just as it closed at 799 votes.
Wow! So as far as like vocal fandoms go, I think the Dragons one is pretty out there.
They are
very strong.
Passionate fans, but I don't think that necessarily means that this was not a very impactful trailer, this one that we're about to talk about.
Can we talk to it as well? He is on the line, I think, the trailer. Hey man, keep up the great work.
Yeah, well done.
I love your stuff.
Yeah.
You do you. and see you again soon.
I mean, I know, like, just from my circles, this trailer is the most popular. I mean, I'm the most excited because I have a lot of animation friends, so everyone's just, like, drooling over the way that this looks and just like what it means for the animation industry in Hollywood, where it's like doesn't exclusively, it's not exclusively a kids movie. Like, it's not really being marketed as a
kids movie. Well, that's, that didn't even occur to me. And I think that you're right, that is huge. There's definitely been a sense, I think, in American animation for a long time. And I've spoken about this at length, I think, on the podcast. Like, there has been this strange, like, unknown gap between, yeah, like you're saying, like, making a movie for kids and making a movie for adults. And it seems like teenagers are very sorely served when it comes to animation.
Yeah, and like they just, you know, mainstream Hollywood animated films just don't look like this right now. I mean, like in Hollywood at least. Like, I know like other.
No, I don't think they look like this anywhere. Yeah, I'm serious. Yeah. And this is a new thing.
Especially with 3D animation. Like 3D animation, everyone's just kind of like have this Pixar standard and everybody kind of wants to look the same. And we haven't really seen a movie that like that's trying to be experimental and have this multimedia style. But for something so mainstream like Marvel movies or Spider-Man, you know, like...
Yeah, that's what gets me.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, because every Marvel movie is literally using the same camera now.
Yeah. It's just like... Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
The fact that they're experimenting with such a valuable brand, basically. You know, it's Spider-Man. This is... basically Sony's most valuable asset.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's their only asset.
It's it's like their only big guaranteed hit franchise.
They were talking a few years ago about making a Spider-Man cinematic universe. They are doing that, I guess. with Venom and Carnage. But like they were gonna make a Sinister Six movie.
Yeah,
that somehow didn't have Spider-Man in it.
Aunt May movie was a.
Oh my god!
Hey, I mean, look, they could make a very successful movie about the arc where Aunt May marries J. Jonah Jameson.
Oh my god!
Because that was a thing that happened in the comics, lest we forget.
I'm sure.
This movie looks. Like, because, like you're saying, Nina, everyone's been, like, shooting for the Pixar, Pixar movies and Disney movies. As CG has developed, the goal has been shooting for photorealism. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think it's sort of arguably hit its peak with Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within. I'm joking. It probably started to... You know, I can't think where it, you know, even with The Incredibles 2, people are like talking like, wow, you can see the pores on Mr. Incredible's skin. And it's like, you know, that seems to have been the goal for a while, like imitate live action.
And I feel like the medium has kind of been stagnating a bit because like nobody's been really thinking about like what CGI can do as
an That's CG in Hollywood. There are lots of CG artists who, and also in games as well, who have tried to sort of bend it back the other way and go, no, how can we use 3D as a tool?
Yeah.
For sure. Like to do its own thing. Like David O'Reilly springs to mind as one. He did a guest episode on Adventure Time, where it was all in 3D. And yeah, people have been trying to push towards that, but usually Hollywood CG movies are tied up with so much money that they can't afford literally to take risks too much with the style of a movie.
But yeah, but like here they're like, I just love how they're pushing it. Like every shot is so gorgeous. The lighting, the coloring, you know, like... See a superhero movie this colorful. Like, we thought Ragnarok was colorful. And then, like, I'm watching this, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is what comic book movies should look like. You know, they should be this bright and crazy. And, you know, I'm sure it's going to get a huge fallout because, you know, Miles Morales is a really popular character and one people have been wanting to see for a long time. Like, I know when Marvel finally got the rights to Spider-Man again, like, a lot of people were kind of hoping they would do Miles Morales instead of Peter Parker again, because, like, we've seen so many Peter Parker movies in the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they ended up doing him again. But, like, it's great to, like, finally see Miles in a movie. And, like, I know I think it's going to be, like, another Black Panther thing where it's just going to be this incredible experience and, like, and where, you know, the African-American community is really going to come out and, like, be like, yes, finally, more. Like, we had one last year. Let's, like, have another one. Like, and it's just so exciting. Like, everything about this movie is really exciting to me. Like, it's indicating so many fun things for, you know, big budget Hollywood animated films that I can't wait to see the turnout. And I just want to watch it, like, right now. Like, it's mm-hmm.
Well, I think this was developed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the screenplay.
Right. And I think it was also their, like, development project as well. So, mm-hmm. This is just all speculation. I wouldn't be surprised if a large part of it being so radically different has a fair amount to do with them, because the one thing I was, like, thinking about watching this trailer, and it is crazy, like, the way, like you're saying, it has, like, all of these colorful things going on. It has, like, sound effects on screen, and it's sort of got, like, a slightly similar to, like, Paper Man thing going on, where mm-hmm. you can see lines on the CG characters and stuff. That doesn't happen unless someone higher up gives the artist permission to go wild. And the fact that the artists have been given that permission, I think, is almost as remarkable as the job that they've done with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so exciting to see. If you told, like, 12-year-old me that this film existed, I would maybe believe you. But I definitely, you know, lose my mind if I knew this was happening when I was that age, because it's everything that, for me, like, Spider-Man is. It's like, it's cool, and it's joyful, and it's
fun.
Yeah, it's fun and dynamic as well. It's so dynamic. It's crazy.
And also, just the whole plot seems pretty insane as well. The fact that it's doing the multiple realities thing. We don't know quite how that is going to factor into things, but we've got multiple mm-hmm. Spider-Men and also Spider-Gwen.
It's really crazy again that, like, there's a movie that's playing with alternate universes.
Mm.
Like,
yeah,
like, that's another thing that they haven't really done. Like, there are so many comic book movies now that they can, that's a thing that they can do. And audiences are familiar enough with the characters that they can go, yeah, but what about an alternate reality?
And have you noticed one of my favourite things in all the Spider-Man movies that have come out so far is whenever, like, early in the story, they have their crap Spider-Man outfit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed the crap Miles crap Spider-Man outfit at the end?
Yeah, that was hilarious.
I didn't actually. I was, like, too blown away. But I think the first time me watching this movie is going to be similar to the first time I watched Speed Racer or Tekken King Creed, where I'm just, like, dazzled mm-hmm. by the lights and the shapes and like the running. And then, like, the second time I'm going to be like, okay, let's watch it for the story and, like, just soak it in again. Cause yeah, I think, like, my third time watching the trailer, I realized that it was, like, that it was going to be a handing over the reins kind of movie. And
yeah, and I love already how they're framing that. Like, I just love that line that Peter says where it's like, you know, you don't you to, I don't want you to do it like me. You should do it like you, you know? Like, I don't know. I'm already, like, very, I'm already invested. Like, I already feel very emotional about this just because, I mean, I've always liked Spider-Man, but I felt kind of, like, a little exhausted with, like, how Spider-Man's been in, like, all these movies. Like, I wasn't, you know, a big fan of, like, Amazing Spider-Man. Well, I knew, like, Homecoming. I'm just kind of, like, there is just something really fun about this whole concept that, like, really excited in a way that, like, I reminds me of, like, why I like superheroes and comic books, you know, and it's like how you said, they're not shying away from, like, the very comic booky, like, alternate universes and different interpretations of the same character. Like, they're just kind of going full into it, like, and not, like, being worried that, like, audiences aren't going to respond to it because it's too comic booky. They're just like, nah, let's just do it. And I'm so excited.
Do you think they're going to have, like, the Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire versions of Spider-Man in there somewhere?
And not possibly.
Because they can, you know, they, like, the way you do it, as an animated movie, it's the way you could do it. And they could, if they work out, they somehow work Japanese Spider-Man into it, I will be so happy.
And they could even do Tom Holland, because, you know, Marvel is in association with this. So, like,
could they also do the one that was filmed in LA and they had to use, like, actual real nets for when he captured villains? They sort of did a dodgy
one.
Yeah. But they filmed it in LA where there was, like, one building that was tall enough for him to stand on it. I love that. Well, that's how much I loved Spider-Man. I was, you know, as a kid, I was desperate enough to just watch anything Spider-Man. I watched the old 70s movie and series, like, non-stop. It's really, it's exciting. I'm excited about Spider-Man again. And the other thing as well that it gets right for me about Spider-Man, which Homecoming got back to a little bit, was that it's really a story about a kid who is in high school and he lives in a neighborhood, you know, just outside of a big city. And it's a small town story, really, Spider-Man. And
friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Exactly. And that's why all the stuff of him just hanging out in the city and, you know, eating whatever they were eating, pie and whatever, like, is in there.
Hamburgers.
Was it hamburgers?
Yeah.
And also, just in this trailer, you just get, like, a hint of, like, the relationships and stuff. Like,
Yeah. I already love the relationship between Peter and Miles. Like, I think it's going to be so fun.
It has a lot of heart. Yeah, I'm really excited about this one.
Yeah, everyone was really impressed with the first teaser we saw. Like, oh, wow, this is actually going to be something really exciting. And then this just knocked it up into the stratosphere. And it's like, okay, this is probably my most anticipated anime
movie. Yeah, because, I mean, the first trailer was like, okay, this is going to be really cool. And it's going to look unbelievable, like nothing you've ever seen. And then this one, like, doubled down on that. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, no, trust this, guys. This is going to be really crazy. And it also, you know, reassured everyone that there's going to be a real story as well.
Yeah, like, it added the heart.
Yeah. It. Yeah, I think a lot of people are really, really looking forward to this one. And, yeah, I think the thing that I've seen a lot of people talking about as well with regard to it is that hopefully it could set a precedent for, as we were saying at the start, just CG films and animated films in general looking a bit more interesting.
Yeah, it's like different in so many ways. Like, it's an action film, animated action film. I mean, it's obviously still got comedy in it, but it, and like you said, it's not necessarily so much a kids film, more.
Yeah.
But I basically, a while ago, I wrote like an opinion piece saying that animation, kind of what it needs is not necessarily film, like loads of films for adults. You need more animated films for a general audience, like the same sort of people like Marvel films are aimed at, for example, or
sure.
And this is kind of, this is that. This is what I was talking about, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy just how well, without explicitly saying, hey, teenagers, this is for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the audiences feel...
How Suicide Squad did it and did horribly with
that. Yeah, yeah. Well, because that was done in a very cynical, like, sexist fashion mm-hmm. that glorified violence and everything else. It's really weird, like, how I get the impression that the reason people are excited about it is because they didn't realize that they were primed for it either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with superhero movies now being run of the mill, the idea of there being a Spider-Man movie doesn't blow anyone away. But yeah, the idea of it having a different audience is exciting.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
this is going to be a good movie.
It's also
fantastic. I can't. I'm counting the seconds. Like, I need it now. Like, I'm gonna, like, that's all I want for Christmas is to see this movie.
I also just remembered how bummed out I am that the Donald Glover Deadpool series didn't happen.
Did anyone read the script that he released on Twitter?
Yes, I did.
Related to that.
I did.
It was so, he's such a bloody genius that he wrote this thing like in what was clearly sort of like a semi-sarcastic fit almost.
Mm.
But it's like the most articulate, hilarious, well-paced, entertaining, insightful, sarcastic rant in the form of a series that he wanted to make could be like it's but I think the thing that is funny about that is I think people would have completely accepted that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly the way that he wanted to do it, and it wouldn't have actually ruffled feathers or confused anyone.
Mm-hmm.
This was
a script for Deadpool,
the animated series.
Yeah, basically what he did was he released on Twitter, it looked like a script for an episode, but it was in fact something that he did entirely on his own that was like a meta commentary on how he wasn't allowed to do what he wanted to do with the series,
right?
Because people were like, higher ups were tentative about people getting stuff or him pushing things too far, like violence or thematic things. Mm. It's really worth going back to check out. It reads really well.
Hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. I should go read that.
And some, they also, was it Titmouse released an animation test from it as well?
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
So yeah, you show what it would have looked like as well. I don't know if it will ever happen in any form, but it's a shame.
I don't really know if I personally need any more Deadpool. I think the world is Deadpool enough without actually Deadpool being in it.
Honestly, that's a really good point. Oh my God.
Like, I don't need... particularly, like, I think when the second movie came out, I was like, I don't need gun violence to be a joke again.
Mm.
It's starting to wear a little bit thin on me. Yeah. But there wasn't a Deadpool trailer. There was a Spider-Man trailer. And Spider-Man's a nice boy. And he looks after his family. And
he's on.
His aunt or his cop dad or whoever.
Depends which Spider-Man you're talking about.
Yes.
And he's got a giant robot. No, that's a different Spider-Man. That's Japanese Spider-Man. The best of all Spider-Man. right, yeah. So the final trailer that came out this week, or the last one we're going to be talking about in detail anyway, is perhaps the one that was anticipated in advance, and that would be the How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World first trailer, which will be obviously the concluding part of the How to Train Your Dragon trilogy that is coming out in America on March the 1st, 2019, and in other places a bit before that, including in the UK on February 1st. So,
Yeah, this one also dropped pretty early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
wait.
This is
it's been a long time.
Yeah, this is another one that's been delayed a lot.
Because we knew there was going to be three. They made it after the first movie. They're like, okay, we're going to do three, and we're going to follow like Hiccup's entire journey as he grows up, and like each one's going to like. And so like we've been waiting for this third movie. It just never happened. Now finally we're seeing it, and it's like, oh, I miss this world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, that's why I liked these. I forgot how much I like these movies and how fun the world is and just how beautiful these movies are too. Like, I always forget how gorgeous they are.
They're
stunning.
This trailer is absolutely beautiful. There's some amazing imagery in it. I guess it's the Hidden Dragon world, but it's all like fluorescent and everything, and it looks amazing. And obviously we've also got Toothless seems to have found a female equivalent called the Light Fury, who is a white dragon. We've seen a poster before, but we actually...
Does she have blue eyes?
Yes.
She's a blue-eyes white dragon?
Yeah.
Her eyes are
Sorry.
Blue. Shit.
Sorry.
And we see a little... And I have to admit, it's kind of a bit of a pet hate of mine, like romance subplots in films involving animals or children. It's like, so we don't really need that. But it is really cute in the trailer where Toothless does the little dance to impress her.
And his whole mouth is open. Yeah. He's like, ah!
And she's not impressed. I think thematically, the film series has sort of like set itself up to be this generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about meetings and partings and all the things that happen in life. So, you know, the last movie, him getting, you know, him like being with Astrid is,
yeah,
it sort of laid the table for it to happen to Toothless at some point. So it doesn't feel so gratuitous.
Yeah, like, especially since he's been the last one since the first movie, you know?
Mm-hmm. He's gonna have to repopulate.
Well, that's sort of the thing. The first line is like, Hiccup is like, when I was a boy, there were dragons.
Oh,
there were dragons.
That's in the trailer.
Like, nobody knows where they are. And like, that was the first line of the book, too. And then they're like, they're bringing that for the trailer, and I'm like, oh no, what's gonna happen?
I think that's because you have to have it early in the film, because I think other, like, with like films aimed at children, you have to like set up that you can't just put it at the end. I think, yeah. So I have heard that this was something that was probably coming for a while. people who know the story, and it's like, I'm not ready for that, but okay.
I'm not ready for it either. Though the quote did imply that like only a few people know where they went.
So, yeah,
like,
so
they're probably still around. They didn't. It's like, it's not like they're all gonna die.
Yeah, that was the relief. The fact that they've gone, not they're dead. Because I think that's kind of what I was thinking was going to happen. I thought they were going to go extinct, and I think no, that's too dark. I can't cope with that.
Yeah, that's. We love these dragons. They're so cute.
But the question is, right, now Hiccup and everything is grown up, are they going to start talking with Scottish accents now?
He's going to start calling her a canny lass.
Because the adults have Scottish accent and all the young ones have American accents. So it's yeah.
Chris, you're breaking the reality of the film. You've kind of... Sorry, Nina.
No, I'm sorry. I was just making a joke. Like, maybe it's the beard that makes the accent come out.
Possibly. This is funny though. I'm reminded a little bit. I was listening to an interview with Brad Bird in the week talking about Incredibles 2 and the decision he made not to age up any of the characters from the first movie. And he said he took a leaf out of the Simpsons book.
Yeah.
And the thing that he said was that the essence of Dash, for instance, was that he was a 10-year-old boy with a boundless energy, right? And he said the problem was that he found that if he was going to age up Dash to be like 15, 16, that energy would be very different. And it would change the character a lot.
Yeah.
And I have to say, as someone who's only casually am a fan of How to Train Your Dragon, I love the first film. I didn't watch any of the TV series or specials. And when the second film came out, I thought it was interesting, but I wasn't in love with it as much as I was the first movie. And it is strange to see Hiccup, almost a completely different character now in this new movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's something that you see very much in animated, particularly American animated movies. Is characters being able to change so much. Because he's now basically, he's the leader of their tribe, right?
Yeah, he's an adult.
He's the leader. So I don't, I really don't know what to expect with this one. It looks nice. It looks a little bit like Avatar to me, the whole... and I'm not really a fan of Avatar, like the whole like dragon world. I'm probably less enthusiastic for this than the other movies. Only because I feel like it's quite hard to be a casual fan of these films. There's a sense, I think, a little bit that there's like a lot of catching up to do.
Well,
every time you jump in again, do you know what I mean?
Well, I love the movies, but I did watch like an episode or two of the TV series, but it's all about the movies for me.
Yeah, like you don't have to watch the TV series and the specials to know what's going on. Like the
it's filler, movies are pretty really.
Oh really? They don't really,
yeah, well,
set they, up anything that no,
it's like how DreamWorks has kind of had that model where they'll have like a TV show, like they did that yes. for like
oh yeah they have so many TV shows,
and it's just like a way to like continue to monetize the property. It's not really, it's just like more adventures, but it's not.
Oh, actually. I see. Okay, yeah. Okay.
You don't need to watch the TV series to catch up the films. It's not like that. You can just watch the movies, and the movies are good. And don't worry about the TV series.
Yeah.
I know there will be people who are screaming at their podcast playing software at the moment going, no, I love the movie, the TV series. It's amazing. Everything Dragons is amazing. But I'm just saying my opinion that they're fine, but they just feel like kid shows to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're made by different teams, like independently of each other. So like, yeah.
Whereas the film is
like
fantasy, you know, epic fantasy to me.
I think what I'm talking about a little bit is maybe more to do with like the fandom. I get the sense is quite like all fandoms really is kind of insular.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this deep level of like understanding and appreciation for a lot of things that happen in the movies. And in the world of Dragons, that I kind of feel a little bit left out of. So when like the trailer starts and suddenly he's got a beard and he looks like he doesn't look like a dweeb anymore.
I don't really know
how to feel about it.
I mean, it's a progression, you know.
Yes.
The movie is supposed to be a different period of his life, and like the arc for Hiccup is supposed to be sort of revolve around the specific period of his life and what it demands of him.
This is the story of how he became the greatest hero.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. So like the first movie, it's, you know, he's like a really young teenager, so his concerns and his scope is really...
I miss him being a dweeb.
And then in the second movie, you know, like he's kind of... He already sort of found what his identity was, like what he was good at, and like found his place. So it was more about like redefining that and like...
Responsibilities.
And really pushing his relationships more. And I feel like this one is going to sort of take that even farther than, you know, because, you know, now he's not like a dweeby 13-year-old trying to figure out who he is. He knows who he is. But now he has to figure out what he has to do more. So it's not so much about identity anymore.
I get the impression there's basically just one shot of like grown up beardy Hiccup.
Think that's the last shot?
I'm pretty sure that is. It might be like wraparound or whatever. Of you start with him saying, "Oh, there were dragons when I was a boy," and he looks.
Gather like, around my grandchildren. Yeah. I'll tell you. Yeah,
because most of the trailer he is Hiccup as he looks normally, like at the end of.
You're right. I didn't think about that. Yes.
So he's not going to look like that the whole movie. It's not. This isn't like his new Caps beard look.
Yeah, I think that would be really hard to market. Like even if, because it's still a kid's movie. I think it would just, I don't know. I feel like marketing like a main protagonist having a beard would be kind of hard for a kid's movie.
It feels a little bit to me like the movie is going to be like the last act of The Lion King.
Yeah.
When the trailer started, I almost started singing to myself, "Can you feel the love?" Like it was... I was getting, sort of those sorts of vibes about it. I don't really get... I mean, obviously there's way more to the character than this, because it's just a trailer, and I'm not going to judge the whole film based on the trailer. That would be stupid. That being said, I'm not so interested in the villain. Like, he wants to kill Hiccup. He wants to kill Toothless. Okay. He's not going to do that.
I seem to remember before they had said that the... basically the villain from the second one was going to come back and was going to have a much like more expanded character and everything. And it was going to, cause people felt that maybe the villain was a bit flat in the second one. And they were suggesting that it would all make sense like in the third one. And he is credited, the same guy is credited as being in it, but there is obviously a new villain as well. So I don't know. I don't know if the new villain will like be teaming up with the old villain or what.
Right. Cool. Yeah. No. I've only seen the second one once. And I did like a lot of the. It felt like a classic generational story to me. You know, once his parents were getting really involved in the story, and obviously like the ending really involves his parents. One of them. That was good stuff. So, you know, if there's any more like that in this, then I think it will be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm excited for this because I love those movies and I love Toothless, and also the music is amazing.
The soundtrack is amazing. Like the first few seconds of the trailer, I was like, this is definitely the most nostalgic of the movies that we've talked about today, because, you know, its franchise has been around for a while now. And just like seeing the scene of when they first met again was like, oh, they've come so far, you know. And who doesn't love Toothless? You have to be pretty heartless not to like him.
This was the one that was like hyped up most going up. And, you know, they said that it was coming out like days in advance. So I knew it was coming out. I knew I was going to have to cover it. And I was basically spending most of the day like refresh, refresh, refresh. When's it coming out? Refresh, refresh, refresh. And then I saw someone reacting, oh my god, I've just seen a trailer. And I'm like, when did it come out? So I'd managed to miss it at that point. And so then I went to look it up, and somehow I managed to click on the trailer, and I was like, this is very familiar. This seems like the second one. And I realized I had clicked on the trailer for the second movie. Eventually, I found the right one and wrote up about it, so it's all okay.
Wow, Tobey Maguire looks so young in this Into the Spider-Verse trailer.
Yeah, so this is coming out early next year. So, and there will be a preview of it, Annecy, coming up next week as we record this. So, we might hear some more about the film coming out soon as well. So that is our trailers that we were going to talk about. They're the major ones. There have been some other animation related ones, like the new trailer for Christopher Robin, which is all kinds of adorable.
The Kingdom Hearts 3 trailer just dropped
today. Oh yeah, I have not seen it. I don't really know about Kingdom Hearts. I know
it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist until it's actually on a shelf and you can buy it.
January next year, that's when it's coming out.
Yeah, watch that release date slip. Sorry. I just can't be you know it's again. I've been abused by Square's release dates since I was 10. I'm not falling for it again.
Yeah. I don't know.
And also we got the trailer for the Bumblebee movie from Travis Knight, director of Kubo and the Two Strings.
The Transformers spin-off.
Yeah. Which actually I'm cautiously excited about a Transformers movie again. It's weird.
Has it sort of shaken off a lot of the seediness, seemingly?
Yeah, it's about a girl and her car / Bumblebee, basically.
Any shots of her bum?
No.
Her bum on the car.
Yeah.
It's Hayley
Hayley Steinfeld.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she can't do much wrong.
She's the voice of Spider-Gwen as well, so big Christmas for her.
Big Christmas, yeah.
Yeah.
She's going to get everything she wanted.
Yeah.
She's great. Have you guys seen... Sorry to derail. Have you guys seen Edge of 17?
I have not, though.
I have not.
It's a James L. Brooks produced teen movie that she was in a couple of years ago, and it's seriously one of the most underrated teen movies of the last 5 years, and she is amazing in it. So she's good anyway, so I'll watch her do pretty much anything.
Yeah, well, this might be saving the Transformers franchise. You know, the very first one, there was a lot of rubbish in it because Michael Bay, but there was still a bit of a... There was that Spielberg-y side slightly to it with Bumblebee and...
Was there?
It's a long time...
I never felt it.
It would have been nice if it was like a Herbie kind of feeling where I was like, oh, a boy in his car, but there's just too much nonsense with the parents... And the yelling and the bad jokes constantly.
Admittedly, I haven't seen it since it came out, but
the awkward jokes as well, like the whole joke about him keeping porn magazines under his bed.
Yeah.
There's an extended joke about masturbation in a Transformers film. Not what you need. And then Megan, what's her name?
Megan Fox.
Being. Ogled over as much as... I'm just thinking of the classic. I when I think of that move, those movies, I think slightly more of the Mark Kermode rant. His classic review of Transformers 2 than I do, the actual movies, because it's slightly easier to bear.
Yeah, I think of the Lindsay Ellis video series.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Oh yeah, they're glorious.
Her video on Hercules is so good.
Yeah, it really, really is. I love her.
Okay, that's probably enough Transformers talk.
Yeah, probably. Now we're veering
Before we close out for the episode, we haven't paid a visit to the water cooler for a little while, where we talk about stuff that we have been watching lately. So in the fact it's been so long since we've done it, I probably watched an absolute ton of things because I was sick for quite a while, so I just watched loads of stuff. But I'm not going to get around to talking about all of it. I have recently been watching the second half of the second season of My Hero Academia, which continues to be thoroughly awesome and entertaining. And it's
so good.
The animation is Studio Bones animation. It looks so good. I've been watching it on Blu-ray, and it's just, when you're used, I love One Piece or whatever, but stuff like that, it just keeps going. The animation, sometimes it is so wonky. But
yeah, no one does polish like Studio Bones.
Well, I think, a large part of their academia, I think actually, sorry to be kind of pedantic about it, My Hero Academia has a few studios working with it, I think. Or a few different teams, which is kind of why it's able to maintain the quality that it has. I think one studio did the first season, and then they did like a few episodes of the next one. And then it switched to another studio. But like the supervising team was the same. So it feels consistent enough. But yeah, the quality is unbelievable.
I'm caught up with the anime like right as it's airing, like the most recent episode from Saturday, and it's still so good. And the animation in that episode particularly stood out to me. So like, Chris, there's still a lot to look forward to. Like, it's only going to get better. That's awesome. The fun thing about the show.
Yeah, I can start on season 3 now, which is awesome. My Hero Academia is very good, and watch out for my review for the second half of season 2 on the site soon. And also, one thing I did want to talk about, because I know Nina, you have also seen it, we haven't had a chance to talk about it on the podcast, the fact that we both got to see Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs. Dan, Dan, did you see it? Did you get a chance?
I did, yeah.
Oh, so we've all seen it. Oh, excellent. Mm-hmm. So we can talk about it a little bit. We won't go into too much detail, because I guess there still might be a chance of us doing a full discussion, like maybe like when it comes out on like to rent on Blu-ray and digital and everything. But I should say about myself, I am a big Wes Anderson fan. I'm obviously a big animation fan. That goes without saying. What?
You're Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson, yeah. And also, I love Japan. So, by rights, I felt like this should have been my new favourite movie. but it wasn't. It's amazingly... I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. If you read my review of the website, I thought it was an amazing... piece of art and everything, and some of the animation in it just blows me away, and it's very entertaining, everything. But I did have issues. I did go into it having read lots, and seen lots of things of people having issues with the cultural elements, everything. And I had that in my head, and I did feel like, I'm not sure, is this okay? I was kind of thinking out, as I was thinking, like, this is kind of, it's a bit on the edge for me at times, which was annoying, because I wanted to love it so much, and it is so beautifully made.
Yeah, it really is. I was, for the first time in a long time, well, actually not a long time, but this happens every now and again, when you're kind of familiar enough with animation and films, you kind of know how everything's done. Mm-hmm. But there were moments in this movie where I was just like, how did they do that? How did they how did they do that part? What am I looking at? Like, it was a delight to look at. And I went back and found a bunch of like making of videos, and you know, it was very exciting in that sense, like as a craft piece. Yeah, you know, I felt the same way about it in that sense, Chris.
Yeah, I feel similarly. Like when I watched it, it was like right when it was coming out, so I didn't have really any other think pieces to read about it. I was one of, you know, first batch to watch it, so all I had was my first initial impressions. And again, like I was blown away by the style. I thought it was heads and above Fantastic Mr. Fox in like the animation wise, like how much they've like improved and like refined this Wes Anderson stop motion style. I love the composition of the frames where everything was kind of like balanced and flat and very poster like. I thought that was amazing, especially to do in stop motion. I had a couple problems when I watched it on my own, but I didn't have as many problems as other people did. And then like once, you know, think pieces were being written and coming out, I kind of like went back and sort of reevaluated certain things. I'm on the fence about certain aspects that a lot of people seem to take umbrage with. Like I remember like the whole thing about how the Japanese is, there's Japanese in the movie, like all the Japanese characters are speaking Japanese, and how the only way we know what they're saying is it's being translated for us. And as, you know, an American viewer specifically, I thought that was pretty subversive to like make, especially since there were certain scenes where it wasn't even translated. We just have to see this entire conversation in Japanese, and we kind of have to fill in the blanks of what's going on based on the animation and the character expressions and what they were, the actor's performance removed from what they were saying. And I thought that was really amazing to like make American audiences have to do that, because Americans in particular are very, very, very negative when it comes to watching something in a different language, even if there's subtitles. And then to sort of like confront them with these scenes, I thought that was really interesting. But I know like some people sort of saw that as problematic because it like kind of took away the humanization of the Japanese characters. My biggest problem with the movie is the female characters. They really don't exist for any good reason. Like Scarlett Johansson's character has no reason to exist. Like it is pointless. And then of course the foreign exchange girl was, I think she's kind of like, I think she kind of represents everything that's sort of not so great about the movie, where like not a great female character. And then also like this weird thing where it's like this white girl who's a foreign exchange student.
Who's the only person who seems to have any empathy.
And she gets like really invested in foreign politics for some reason. It becomes the leader of like her school's resistance group. And it's like, what? How? That doesn't make any sense. Yeah, like her character, I think, was definitely the weakest part and kind of representative of some of the weaker elements of the film. But overall, I did really enjoy the presentation of the movie. The energy and the pacing of the movie was really dynamic and fun. And I did kind of like some of the scenes with, I don't remember the name of the main protagonist, or the little boy.
Atari.
Yeah, I like some of the scenes with just like Atari and the dogs. Like I thought they were really endearing, and like I understood what this kid was basically saying, like even if I didn't know exactly what he was saying. Like I think it was his humanity, I think, came through in my mind. But yeah, I you know, I can totally see how some people would be put off by that.
Yeah, it's a fun movie. I think it, for me, it just, first of all, the ending didn't quite land for me. I liked it enough, but I think my favorite character was the Bryan Cranston dog.
Yeah, I feel like for the ending, we needed to have spent more time with the humans.
Yeah, and we didn't. And we purposely didn't.
Yeah.
Because at the start of the movie, they're set up as the other. And I think the thing that for me, if I, so I had a good, I can't deny that when it finished, I felt satisfied and I had a good night at the movies.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, I feel like particularly the way the world is revealing itself to be in many places at the moment, a story about othering doesn't seem helpful. And
especially when it's simplified, so
like, yeah, it's a simple, first of all, it's a simplified, there's the othering that you have, which is the main one, which you're meant to see, which is, you know, having an empathy for dogs and not treating them like you know, unconvicted criminals, basically. But then you have like this other strange othering going on with this idea of, and this is when the film, I think, does get problematic, because it kind of feeds into the stereotype of Asian, particularly Japanese, groups being kind of passive. And I think that's a very westernized, othered idea, which fails to take in, is a very simplified sort of,
and it's not really
representation
to explore that. Like, I've seen that explore, like Shin Godzilla, I think, really explore that kind of aspect of Japanese culture, but that's a Japanese movie made by Japanese people sort of critiquing their own values. But when it's coming from Western people who are kind of just like, think Japan is cool just because it's cool, and then they're trying to say something.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, I think the thing, the biggest problem that it's had is that it failed to recognize the fact that Asian Americans are not Japanese. And that it's there's a whole audience which you've kind of ignored by only thinking that you're making the film for white audiences and possibly a curious Japanese audience. It's not it's just old fashioned, and it's not it was just slightly tiring, especially when the imagery of Megasaki and the was he the mayor? Was sort of tied up with sort of semi-imperialist overtones.
Fascist.
Yeah. Which is something which, if you're dealing with, it's a leaky stick of dynamite. You've got to be careful with it.
Yeah, I mean, like,
you've got to be very sure about what you're doing.
Like, Japanese audience, like, from Japan, like, I think they like the movie because they tend to like Wes Anderson and they like dogs. And, like, I think there wasn't really any kind of problems. But, yeah, I think what you're right. Like, if, you know, you're making it about Japan, and if, you know, Japanese audiences are fine and white audiences are fine, but you're forgetting that they're Asian Americans and their perspective is different and unique. And, like, they're kind of caught in between this, and they're the ones who are kind of getting the short end of the stick.
Especially Japanese Asian Americans, like, having made a film about internment.
Yeah, because they're
essentially, they're going to have a different perspective on it.
Very different, for sure. Like, very different, and different from, like, you know, non-American Japanese people.
Precisely. Yeah. Because it's American history.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's
a strange oversight to do that. I mean, that being said, it's a complicated one, because I do love a lot of the vibes that the film has, and
same.
It's sort of the fact that it is, it does have tinges of Japanese aesthetics reinterpreted by, I assume, mainly European artists. Well, one
thing I can give this movie credit for, and it's interesting, we talked about Kubo earlier, is that these movies are very similar in that sense, where it's like a Western production house kind of interpreting Japanese aesthetic Vulture. But to give this movie a little more credit than Kubo, it had more actually Japanese people working on the script, working on the background design, the character design,
right,
making the puppets, doing the art, you know, whereas Kubo really didn't have any Japanese people who worked on that movie other than some of the actors.
Mm-hmm.
This movie did have actual Japanese artists and writers who worked on the film and were a part of the creative process just as much as anyone else, which, you know, I want to give them that credit because, like, that does make a big difference.
Yeah, I've never had quite the same reaction to a film as I did to this one, where it's that I've been, like, so conflicted by, on one, you know, it basically being this film, there's so much I really love about it. Like,
oh, definitely.
The way it's just, it is a work of art. Just, and like, you just look at every frame and it's amazing. And, you know,
yeah, the compositions were beautiful, definitely. Yeah,
every frame.
The way the story is told is good. And I like the dog characters a lot as well.
Yeah, I like the dogs.
Yeah, but I was just really pissed off with the decisions that were made that upset so many people and made them feel uncomfortable.
I think the thing that is, I'm not going to defend him at all, but I think the problem is that it wasn't, I don't think he thought it was a decision.
Mm.
I think it's the fact that he wasn't even considering these things as a decision is the problem.
Mm.
Yeah. With a lot of prejudices and problematic behavior around race, it's usually to do with blind spots and exactly. ignorance than any kind of malice.
Yeah,
but I'm not saying that should be excused. I just think I think that's probably more of what happened than, hey, how do I, you know, piss off everyone?
Yeah, there weren't. Because yet I was saying there were Japanese people who helped make the film, but they weren't Japanese Americans.
No.
And that's the difference here. Because Japanese wouldn't know what Japanese Americans.
Well, it was made in London.
That too.
It was made in London, and Wes Anderson was Skyping a lot of the time.
And he lives in Paris.
Yeah. So I don't think his perspective is one which is probably tinged with... But, you know, that being said, nor is mine. My perspective isn't one in which I'm frequently talking to Asian Americans. It's to do with just, I don't know, listening, and that's it.
Yeah, like, you know, if you can't just, like, borrow a culture and their aesthetic because you think it's cool.
Even if it is, I think you can if you do it respectfully.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You can't just borrow it. You have to, like, go a little deeper.
Mm. Yeah. There are ways to do it.
You know, like the Ghost in the Shell live action movie where they're just like, oh, Japanese techno fusion looks cool, but then they didn't actually give a crap about the politics and how it was related to, like, post-war and Japan and all this other stuff. So, you have to go deeper.
I did finally see that, and yeah, it's bad.
Like, think about,
but
like,
Chris, they did the bit. They did the bit where she jumps off and she's got no strides on. She jumps off the jumps off the building, and you see a little bit of her nipple.
It really,
like, wow.
It really reminded me of like the Watchmen movie, and like it being made by someone who basically gets the visual side of it, but completely missed the point of everything else.
Well, you can contrast with something like Coco, where, like, it was predominantly, the directors were white, but, like, they went the extra step.
To be fair, I think the co-director has Mexican heritage, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, but, and it shows, because it wasn't just like, oh, Day of the Dead is cool. It's like, no, let's actually, like, look into, like, what makes this holiday what it is, and what is the cultural impact of this, and like what is a decidedly Mexican story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it can be done. You just, you know, it's got to be for more than aesthetic.
And also, like, Moana was another one that they did.
See, you saying, Nina, it has to be more than aesthetic about a Wes Anderson film. I mean, in terms of like calories, you know, I think a large part of Wes Anderson movies is the aesthetic. So that's probably where this, you know, he probably feels a kind of confusion, because it's like, well, that's exactly this. It's probably exactly the same thought process he had with like Grand Budapest Hotel. Like, okay, let's take this Eastern European aesthetic and mix it with this European aesthetic. And,
but
you know,
even Grand Budapest Hotel, you know, he still always has these like sidekick ethnic characters. And it's just weird. Yeah. But yeah, like that is the problem with his filmmaking, is that like, cause he really only care. He's not really a storyteller. He's a visual storyteller. Like, he's not always super concerned with plot as he is with the way that it looks and the way that it feels, more so than anything. And
yeah, I think that's probably fair to say. I think I was listening to an interview with him about the Isle of Dogs, and he said, like, during development, because he made it pretty much like an animated movie where he developed the story through the storyboarding process, which I was kind of surprised to hear, but it's really cool. Apparently he tried out a scene where like a dog was like gassed to death because he thought it might be funny.
Wait, what?
And then he realized like that no one else in the room was laughing. So I don't think he has the best judgment, like, sight unseen.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Oh, Wes.
Honest Trailers did this really funny video.
Sorry,
every Wes Anderson movie, and I really highly recommend it.
Yeah.
You said that, Chris, exactly the same way that that the woman says about Preston, the cyber dog in. Oh no! She said it about Wallace. Oh, Wallace! Very sort of somber disappointment. Cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. Isle of Dogs.
Very. We set the world to rights there.
Yeah. Very beautiful movie.
Yeah.
But shame about the issues. But I think it'll be interesting, like, to rewatch it, like, you know, having taken on board everything and seeing how, if you rewatch it, if that's maybe less of an issue or what, and you can just appreciate the artistry. I don't know, but I'll see, I guess, when I rewatch it. Because I feel like I'd probably have to own it anyway.
It would be interesting if they released a version of the movie where the Japanese was all subtitled.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did read one article, I think it was written in Japan,
yeah,
by a Japanese-American woman who watched the movie and said that it was a different movie, she felt, if you can understand all the language in it.
There was a, like a recent article by a Japanese person, or I don't know if they would, and they were like saying it was like, they were saying it was like subversive against America or something weird. I don't know. They were saying it.
Oh, they were reading it like it was a self-reflective thing.
Yeah.
I think that's probably giving it a little bit too much credit, but it's possible it could be read that way.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, sometimes death of the artist and all that, like, it's probably in the movie, but whether it was intentional or not is another thing.
Okay, I think because we talked quite a long time about trailers, and then we all pitched in with the Isle of Dogs chat, I think that'll probably do us for an episode.
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah, it better.
Mm-hmm. because it is getting late here now. Sorry. But it has been an awesome chat. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, Dan and Nina, for joining me this week. It's been a lot of fun, as always. So check out all the trailers in the show notes. So if you want to keep up with everything we're doing, you can follow us, of course, on animationforadults.com. You can find all our previous episodes of the podcast on podcast.com, on iTunes, on Stitcher, and on the podcast tab on our website. You can follow us on Twitter, AFA blog. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Tumblr, on Pinterest, on Google+, and on Instagram. And you can follow me personally on Twitter at Mr. Christor. Where can we find you, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Hamu.
And Nina?
You can find me on Twitter at Ninian Ichi.
And of course, if you are interested in submitting any films to Animation Nights New York, you can do so by finding... what's she normally say?
You can go to our website. We have a submission tab and you can submit there for free.
AnimationNightsNewYork.com? Or it's the exact
copy.
Yeah, what's the exact website? Is it animationnights.ny?
Yeah, .nyc. Animationnights.nyc.
Okay, awesome. I cocked up that bit because I couldn't remember what she normally says. Rachel normally manages to remember it, but anyway, we will catch you soon for lots more animation topics. Keep an eye on our social media feeds to find out what we might be doing next. So goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Bye.
Spider-Man does whatever a spider can, spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look.
Emirates are bringing the other side of the world closer to home with daily flights from London Stansted. Starting the 8th of June, you'll be able to fly from London Stansted all the way to Dubai and on to over 150 destinations worldwide, making getting from your home to the other side of the world much simpler. Fly Emirates from London Stansted and discover the other side of the world.